What is the most important characteristic that a commander-in-chief can possess?
Steadiness. An absolute rock steadiness.
I have great judgment. I have good judgment. I know what's going on. I've called so many of the shots.
I've now met with leaders of ASEAN 8 times, visited Southeast Asia more than any other U.S. president, and it reflects the growing importance of ASEAN and this region. ASEAN is key to the U.S. rebalance to Asia, and more importantly, it's key to a peaceful and prosperous future for the world. And we have forged a strategic partnership. The U.S. is committed to building on this solid foundation.
We think trade is something to stop the wars. Trade is something that to improve the communications. When trade stops, the war comes.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. It is 5:11 and today is Thursday. It is September 8th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. Lots to talk about today. Are you drinking concentrated orange juice? A lot of people are not. We'll tell you what's happening to the market a little later in the broadcast, too. We will have a discussion about college, paying for college. Are you putting it on your credit card? Believe it or not, a lot of people are, and it's not a good idea. We're going to tell you about the ins and outs of that as our broadcast gets underway this morning. First, at the WGN Market Desk, here's the overnight intel. Asian stock markets were mixed yesterday after China reported unexpectedly strong trade. Wall Street's NASDAQ hit a record high close. Tokyo's Nikkei overnight shed about 0.5%. Hong Kong gained about 0.5%. The Shanghai unchanged. Wall Street yesterday added about almost 12 points, fell about 12 points, but the NASDAQ added 8 points. The S&P dropped a fraction. Today, we see the Labor Department's report on the number of people who applied for weekly jobless benefits last week. Federal Reserve is also going to release its report on consumer borrowing also today. Freddie Mac will report on the week's average mortgage rates. What's going on with the stock markets? As I mentioned, the NASDAQ managed to inch higher to a new record yesterday. Jane Barrett, the CEO of Goldbean, says the market is still looking for direction.
I think all eyes were on the wage growth numbers, and everyone's looking for, is there enough pressure coming from wage growth to warrant an interest rate raise? And I think the numbers today said no.
Also yesterday, we saw the Beige Book released by the Federal Reserve shows continued economic growth, but still some concerns over inflation. Shows no real direction of where interest rates, the decision on interest rates might go as we move into the latter part of this year. We'll have more on the Beige Book a little bit later on. Of course, we'll discuss it in more detail tomorrow with Paul Nolte here on the show. Yesterday, were you geeking out over the new iPhone and the new iWatch or the new watch? There was about a two-hour event in San Francisco where iPhone 7 was introduced. Tim Cook was the first on stage yesterday to announce what he's calling the best iPhone yet.
And here it is. It's the best iPhone that we have ever created. This is iPhone 7.
The new phone is water and dust resistant. It has high resolution cameras. The fall product debut yesterday, however, did little to move the stock of Apple overnight or yesterday afternoon. However, Nintendo stock did go and Pokemon stock did go higher. Pokemon, of course, coming to the Apple Watch. We'll have more on yesterday's unveiling of the iPhone a little bit later on in the program as well. You cracking open some orange juice this morning with your coffee, maybe a little concentrated orange juice, or probably not. A lot of people have chosen to forgo frozen concentrated orange juice, and the market is melting, for lack of a better description. We're joined this morning by Wall Street Journal reporter Julie Wernow, and she's with us this morning to talk about this. She's been writing about it. Julie, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hi, happy to be here.
Well, so people are not buying this frozen concentrated orange juice anymore?
That's right. I don't know when the last time you had a glass was, but there's been years of decline in people getting up and drinking frozen concentrated orange juice, or really orange juice in general. A lot of people aren't sitting down to breakfast anymore, and it's just not that breakfast food staple that we remember from maybe when we were kids.
Yeah, we'll get into this a little bit later after we take a break here for traffic. But, you know, I even am hard-pressed to even think to the back my last trip to the grocery store if I even saw this at the grocery store. I see regular orange juice, but I don't know that I've seen those little cans of frozen orange juice.
Yeah, there's been, you know, a big shift in consumer tastes, and people sort of look at something like frozen concentrated orange juice and think of it as processed food, and are more likely to go and pick up some kind of, you know, what they consider more natural juice or product. And in fact, the sort of fight against sugary drinks has made a lot of consumers just forego orange juice altogether. And they're just, you know, they get up maybe after a coffee and run off.
We'll get into some of the numbers here as we continue our conversation again with Julie Wernow of the Wall Street Journal. She's been writing about this. We're going to see how this is affecting growers and also the bottom line of some of these orange juice, different groups that promote orange juice.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. It was another ho-hum day for the markets. The Dow Jones declined slightly, dropping 12 points. The S&P 500 fell a fraction of a point, but the tech-heavy NASDAQ did reach its second consecutive record high close, adding 8 points to 5284. Shares in Nintendo jumped 29% after the gaming company announced that it's bringing several titles to Apple's various mobile platforms. A version of the Pokemon Go reality game will soon be available on the Apple Watch and Super Mario Run on the iPhone. The Federal Reserve may have second thoughts about an interest rate hike after a report that the economy grew at only a modest pace in 8 of the Fed's 12 districts. The Beige Book showed weakening growth in two areas, Philadelphia and Richmond, Virginia. And two psychologists have admitted to participating in a $25 million scam that billed Medicare for unnecessary tests on nursing home residents in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 521. And our conversation this morning is about orange juice or the lack of it. Julie Wernow, a reporter with The Wall Street Journal. She writes about emerging markets, soft commodities as well, on with us talking about this. Julie, before the break, we were talking about how people don't seem to be using concentrated orange juice or drinking orange juice for that matter. Give us some of the numbers. We just put on our Twitter account a graph that you guys have put together at Wall Street Journal, and it shows a dramatic drop.
Yeah, that's right. You know, people used to be drinking, you know, millions of gallons of this stuff, and it's declined dramatically over the last, you know, 10 years. But in addition to that, the number of players in the actual frozen concentrated orange juice futures market, which at one point was so exciting that there was an Eddie Murphy movie based off of it, right? That's declined by almost like 75% since its height in the 90s. So you have essentially 60 players or so in the market who are just kind of trading contracts back and forth, which it doesn't make much of a market.
You're right. The number of futures contracts held by traders fell by two-thirds from 1997, where it was 48,921 to 15,410 last week. What are these folks doing? And I'm talking about the growers, the Florida orange juice, orange growers. Are they just going out of business? What are they doing with these oranges?
Well, one thing that's happened that's affecting the market is that in addition to the fact that fewer people are drinking orange juice, the actual orange groves in Florida are being decimated by a disease. So as if it weren't bad enough that people aren't drinking this stuff, you have actually fewer oranges to go around. This disease causes the fruit on the tree to actually drop before it's ripe. It's called citrus greening. And so a lot of the producers are starting to give up. It's just costing them so much to try to fight the disease. And then in addition, they're not getting the same prices they used to for oranges. And so we actually have something like 130,000 acres of orange groves in Florida that have just been abandoned.
Wow. And here in the Midwest, we've been bragging a little bit. We hate to brag, but we've been bragging about our crops here. They're doing just as the best they've done forever in modern history. Really, nobody can remember such a good year. But in Florida, this is going to be the smallest harvest in 52 years for oranges. Can we imagine a day without oranges? Is that going to happen?
I mean, I wouldn't say that the orange crop is going to go away entirely or that people will ever probably stop drinking orange juice. But obviously, it's becoming a less and less relevant market in the marketplace. There are a lot of scientists right now who are working on the problem. They're trying everything from genetically modified crops to, I talked to a scientist actually just yesterday who was telling me that they're trying to find trees that this disease is more attracted to than citrus to try to sort of fend it off. But a lot of it is, maybe 5-10 years out. And so, the producers I'm talking to are saying, I just don't know if I can wait that long. In addition to, they just narrowly avoided this hurricane in citrus grove areas in Florida.
So is it that the industry needs, in addition to getting this, obviously, the disease under control, do they need another spokesperson? Do they need another campaign? I remember back to the days, obviously it was Tang, but the astronauts did a great thing for orange juice, and there were others too that promoted orange juice. Is that what is needed here to get people drinking this again, or have tastes just changed permanently?
They're definitely working on it. I mean, one of the things that they're trying to do is sort of promote orange juice as a healthy drink rather than a commodity or, a sugary breakfast substance, right? And so you'll see sometimes when you go into some of these like little sandwich shops, there'll be these really small portions of orange juice that are selling for, it could be like $3 if you're in New York City for, just a few ounces of orange juice. But the idea is to make it appear as a more premium product as opposed to something that you would just pour like water in the morning. The other effort, I've seen is just a marketing, different marketing techniques. For instance, PepsiCo said on their earnings call the other day that for Tropicana, they're looking at probiotic orange juice, which is, obviously also a push toward consumers who are concerned about nutrition and are trying to, watch their health.
For a population that doesn't really get its nutrients the way they should with regular foods, is there any truth to this notion that it's too sugary? I mean, is an orange juice the kind that you buy at the store generally pretty natural and good for you?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's sort of interesting when with all this talk about added sugar in drinks, et cetera. Orange juice, the sugar that's in orange juice is natural sugar that, is naturally occurring inside the fruit, even when you're looking at the frozen concentrated orange juice kind. I mean, really, the major difference is just that, they are removing a lot of the water in order to make it easier to ship and store. And so you have, I think, sugar metabolizes one way or the other, right? Whether right. It's natural or not. But I do think that there might be a little bit of misinformation out there on the part of consumers.
Julie Wernow is an emerging markets reporter, soft commodities reporter at The Wall Street Journal. And she's with us this morning. You can follow The Wall Street Journal at WSJ and follow her writing at WSJ.com. Julie, thanks for being with us on the opening bell.
Thanks for having me.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone. Apple's new iPhone, more powerful but missing a key component.
This is iPhone 7.
When Apple unveiled its new iPhone 7 on Wednesday, it showed off its more powerful camera, its longer battery life, and how it's now water resistant.
Re-engineering it from the inside out in many ways, including new seals and new adhesives.
But Apple also showed the new iPhone is missing something, a headphone jack. Instead, headphones will have to be wireless or connect through the Lightning port or the power port. That could be a major issue for users, says Michael Gorman, editor-in-chief of the tech blog Engadget.
I think it's going to be annoying for most folks. There aren't a whole lot of people out there that own headphones that aren't reliant on a 3.5 millimeter jack. So that's the standard. That's what everybody is all about.
The iPhone 7 will come with an adapter to make your old headphones or earbuds work. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:39, the business of education and the business of credit, combining in our next segment. If you're having trouble paying for college or thinking about going to college and using a credit card, more colleges and universities are giving you the option of using plastic to pay for your tuition. But is that a wise idea? Matt Schultz is a senior industry analyst with creditcards.com, and he joins us now on the Opening Bell to talk about this. He's been writing about it, and they have been doing some research on this. Matt, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot of kids have trouble finding money for college. A lot of kids are in debt with student loans and other things, but one would never think that they'd be using credit cards to pay for college, but they are, aren't they?
Yeah, it's not the most common way to pay. We found that about anywhere from about 3 to 5% of folks who go to college will use credit cards. So it's not a huge number, but it's still a significant thing.
When I guess you're faced with going to college or not, and the credit card is all you have, they're probably up against a wall. Do colleges and universities who accept credit cards, are the number of those institutions growing?
It's staying relatively flat from when we last looked at this a few years ago. But the important thing for folks to know is that if they are going to pay their tuition bill with a credit card, there's a really good chance that they're going to get stuck with a fee of about 2.6%. And the last thing anybody wants to do when they're paying for their college bill, which is big enough, is have an extra fee tacked onto it.
So where does that fee come from? Is it something the credit card companies charge or the colleges?
Well, it's actually passed on by the third party company that helps the college process those credit card transactions. So in most cases, the college never sees that money. It's actually a separate line item on your credit card statement that just goes straight to that third-party processor.
Is this a bad idea, and if it is, why?
Yeah, if you go to a college that doesn't charge a convenience fee and you know beyond any doubt that you can pay that credit card, that you can pay that tuition bill in a month on that next bill, then you really can reap some rewards from it. But those cases are fewer and fewer. So for most people, it's not a very good idea.
Because in the end, most credit cards still have high interest rates, do they not?
Yeah, absolutely. The average credit card APR is about 15%. So that means that if you pay any interest on these bills, you're going to definitely override any rewards you might get.
There are some that say that colleges and universities who do accept these credit card payments really are doing a disservice to students, and some have stopped because of that. How do you view that? Is it something that you would agree with?
Yeah, honestly, I think that if you are down to the last resort of having to pay with a credit card to go to college, aside from if you're taking a class or two at a community college where it might not be that expensive, but if you're at the last resort of having to pay with a credit card, you seriously may want to consider either finding a cheaper school or taking a semester off, putting some money away, getting yourself in a better financial position before you start in school.
Your research at creditcards.com has shown what in terms of which colleges and universities generally accept credit cards. Is it public schools versus private? Is it community colleges versus four-year institutions?
Well, community colleges are definitely the most likely to accept credit cards, and they're also the least likely by far to charge a convenience fee. So 97% of community colleges accept credit cards, and only 8% of them charge convenience fees. So that can actually make credit cards a better option for folks at that level.
You know, this all comes down, I think, to the bigger conversation of this wildly expensive notion of going to college. It's become so expensive. And it, for somebody who's paying with a credit card, is it that they don't qualify for a student loan, which would probably have lower interest? Or is it that they just have no other option?
It could be any number of things. College is so expensive, but it is important, too. So people are willing to do almost anything they can to pay for it, and sometimes that is that involves paying with a credit card, and it's certainly not the best option.
I know that in your research you've been looking at this for a number of years. Yes, creditcards.com has done a number of different surveys, and you've been looking at this for several years. Is this something that kids who are using credit cards to pay for college, are you seeing them in trouble later as they get the bill comes due?
Well, one thing that we haven't seen in credit cards generally since we've come out of the Great Recession, we haven't seen delinquencies get higher. We've generally seen people handling these things pretty well, and we don't have data specifically as it relates to college tuition stuff, but we have seen that, generally speaking, delinquencies are still really low when it comes to credit cards.
So give us some advice. If we're thinking about doing this, have a student out there listening who's thinking about doing this, is there a credit card or a program that they can find that will potentially help them and save them money?
Well, the bottom line is if there's a convenience fee related to that college tuition payment, then you should probably keep your plastic in your pocket because college is expensive enough without having to pay 2-3% extra just to pay with plastic. And that's more about the policy of that college than it is about a specific card.
And isn't the other side of this coin, if you're using a credit card to pay for the actual tuition bill, you're probably using a credit card to pay for other life expenses as well?
It's entirely possible. And it's one thing if you are somebody who can pay that tuition bill right off the bat and you know you won't accrue any interest. But if you're somebody who's using it as a way to hold yourself over until the next payday, then that's when you might have an issue.
So in the end, you mentioned that delinquencies were down. Are more people using credit cards these days?
It's kind of a mixed bag. We definitely have a group that is kind of all in looking for credit card rewards and applying for sign-up bonuses, which there's never been a better time to apply for that sort of thing at places like creditcards.com. But you have a group of millennials in particular who have been sort of scared straight by the Great Recession and are less likely than previous generations to buy into credit cards.
I know that creditcards.com is releasing a report today, and I hope I'm not breaking the embargo on this. I think it was at 12:01 a.m. Eastern, so I think it's open. Can I ask you a question about this?
Yes.
The report coming out today is that these credit card agreements that we all get with our credit cards, apparently it's above the ability of the average U.S. consumer to understand those.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting what we found that we looked at about 2,000 current credit card agreements and found that they're written at an average of an 11th grade reading level. And what's interesting is that, you know, most of us graduate from high school, but the truth is that most of us also read 2 or 3 grade levels below where we graduated. So that means that a lot of people simply wouldn't be able to understand those credit card agreements.
And what is the impact of that?
The impact is that people can end up making mistakes with that credit card that they may not understand, because the long and short of it is no one should ever enter into any financial agreement that they don't fully feel comfortable with the terms of. And if the credit card agreement is unreadable, then it makes it much harder to understand what you're getting into.
Matt Schultz is a senior industry analyst at creditcards.com with us this morning on the Opening Bell. You can read more about this at creditcards.com, at Twitter, at creditcards.com. And Matt, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 5:53. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing positive this hour, up 13 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well. Crude oil trading higher as well. Let's get the latest on commodities and ag news this morning. Good morning, Ori and Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Finally, a bounce in the livestock market at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Yesterday, live cattle futures posted their biggest daily gain in a month, helped by short covering and some bargain buyers, and lean hog contracts gained more than 3% on bargain hunting and spillover support from the live cattle market. So at the end of the day yesterday, the nearby October lean hog contract up $2.10, October cattle up $2.40 a hundredweight, September feeder cattle up $2.67 a hundredweight. Nice to see that bounce back. And the grain market screen was green yesterday as soybeans, corn, and wheat all gained ahead of the September crop report that will be out next Monday. And export demand continues strong. USDA announced exporters sold 484,000 tons of U.S. soybeans to China and unknown destinations, and more announcements will be forthcoming after China last week signed deals to buy nearly 4 million tons of U.S. soybeans. Now, a quick look at the calendar. Day number two, Sandwich Fair, Sandwich, Illinois. I'll be there with a band on the Agland stage at 12 noon. Hope to see a lot of you there. This Saturday, Salute to Agriculture Day at the University of Illinois. Get your tickets now. It's a night game, 6:30, North Carolina against Illinois. Tailgate party that we always have, selling some of the champion meat cuts. That will occur at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the College of Aces will have its College Connections program at noon. And then next Monday, Chicago Farmers, September meeting in Chicago. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Just a couple of final notes this morning on the iPhone announcement yesterday. There are photographers out there, after seeing the new camera technology on the new iPhone 7, that are really raving about this. Some say it is a better technology than you'll find on, or just as good a technology as you'll find on, an actual DSLR camera. Here's part of the announcement yesterday about the camera from the iPhone event.
So this is the iPhone 7 camera. New 12-megapixel camera system with optical image stabilization, wider f1.8 aperture, six elements in the lens, that sensor's 60% faster, now a quad LED true tone flash, our incredibly fast ISP, and wide color capture. It is the best camera ever in an iPhone.
Probably one of the biggest selling points of the new camera. The watch, by the way, too, is going to have Pokemon Go. We wanted to share with you just a bit of information, if you missed it from the event, if you didn't see it, about how many miles people have walked so far with Pokemon Go. This is going to blow your mind. Ready? 2.9 billion miles people have walked playing Pokemon Go, and now they're going to be able to do it with the iPhone watch as well.